The life and work of one of New Zealand's most inventive artists is being immortalised in an opera. Len Lai was a pioneer of kinetic art, like art that moves, and of filmmaking. His work always challenged traditional boundaries, and it forged new explorations of sound and movement. A couple of years ago, his work was featured in a big exhibition in Melbourne. Some of you might have seen it. Well, Len died in 1980, but he now lives on thanks to Len Lai the Opera, which is now showing in Auckland. It's a multimedia extravaganza with a jazz-influenced score. Eve DeCastro-Robinson is the New Zealand composer who's bringing Len Lai's art and life to the stage. Matthew Crawford caught up with her for Books and Arts Daily.
Len Lai, once called the cowboy from the colonies when he hit London and a party in Hammersmith, they'd never seen or heard a guy like this. But to me, Len's just a creative mate. He's one of the most colourful guys in contemporary art history, and I really wish that I'd met him, because he was an all-round artist. He loved music, he loved jazz, he loved movement, he made sculptures, he made paintings, he walked the talk and talked the walk, and he's one of the most stimulating people I've ever had to work with, even though I never met him.
And that's Eve DeCastro-Robinson, the composer of Len Lai the Opera. The show's playing in Auckland this week, and it's another layer of recognition for the New Zealand artist who's increasingly recognised as an innovative and influential figure of the 20th century. Whether Len Lai was working in sculpture, film, or in any medium, there's always a certain energy apparent, a quality he called ziz. Well, a few years ago in Melbourne, Chris Harris was the exhibition manager for Australia's biggest serving yet of Len Lai's work.
In 2009, the Australian Centre for the Moving Image worked together with the Govert Brewster Gallery from New Plymouth in New Zealand, where the Len Lai archive is held, to stage the Len Lai exhibition, the biggest exhibition of his work that had been seen outside New Zealand up until that time. It was an amazing show full of his kinetic sculptures, films that came out of our collection and some that came from the New Zealand Film Archive, a whole lot of archival materials, notebooks, sketches, there were oil paintings. It was really the first time Len Lai's whole sort of oeuvre had been brought together and shown together, how the films influenced the sculptures, how his research in the South Pacific and other nations really influenced his graphic style and therefore his sculptural style. So it was a really big overview show, and it was really the first time so many kinetic sculptures had been shown at once, and we had what we called the sculpture garden, and they were incredibly loved works. People just kept coming back to see them over and over again, which was beautiful.
Give me a visual sense of what that room was like.
Sure. It was a darkened room full of sort of strange, mysterious, metallic objects, some of which were very fine and, you know, like delicate flowers or fountains. There's a work called Fountain. Some of which were big and industrial and heavy and had cork balls and steel balls and things. And they all moved and make sounds. And I think Len Lai was really interested in how they reacted with your body. So they had a real physical presence. The sense that you got as a visitor was there was a real combination of quite dangerous elements and quite delicate elements, and that you never quite knew what was going to happen next in that space.
And this kinetic sculpture is one called Blade. Picture a 5-foot-tall, narrow sheet of steel wobbling about as it's being set off with a cork ball. Len Lai's design for this dates from the 1950s. He lived from 1901 to 1980, and he followed a course from New Zealand to the Pacific Islands to London and then New York. So what is it about this man and his literally vibrant art that makes him suitable for opera? The New Zealand composer, Eve DeCastro-Robinson.
Len Lai in himself was such a vibrant, creative personality that he seemed to be a perfect protagonist for a piece of, call it music drama or music theatre. But when you're thinking about what to name a genre, It needs to be fairly catchy. You know, Len Lai, the music drama, wouldn't have gone down so well. And because current opera can be, you know, anything pretty much that includes people vocalising on stage with some sort of soundtrack, we thought that opera, Len Lai the opera, summed up what we were on about.
Well, Eve, I wonder if you can tell me the story of when you first discovered Len Lai.
It was back in the 70s, mid to late 70s. I was at art school in Auckland here doing graphic design, and we were introduced to Len's scratch films.
So the scratch film, this is the direct filmmaking where he's working directly onto the...
onto the film stock, yeah, that's right.
Dyeing and painting and scratching and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, and it produces a very vivid and vibrant result, particularly when he starts introducing colour. So I was very taken by these films, and then a bit later there was a big sculptural show at the Auckland City Art Gallery with his famous kinetic sculptures, Blade and a Fountain and a few of the others. And I think one's first experience of these sculptures is a memorable, visceral thing. And then Roger's biography on Len.
This is Roger Horrocks, the author.
Yes, that's right. Came out about 10, 11 years ago. And I read that, and a scheme called Wild Opera came up, run by Creative New Zealand. So I jumped in with the idea that I'd formulate an opera on Len Lai. So I got on the phone to Roger Horrocks and said, what do you reckon we write an opera? And he said, sure, keep talking. And we kept talking, and here we are.
So, Chris, what aspects about Len Lai's art do you think helped propel him to international prominence?
I think for filmmakers as well as visual artists, Len Lai's approach to filmmaking and his sort of invention of direct filmmaking, as it was called at the time, was hugely influential over the experimental filmmakers, particularly in America in the 50s and 60s. He really invented the technique of applying paint and other materials directly to film and scratching on film. The influence of that was massive. No one had really done that before. He influenced the Surrealists through that at the time. He worked really closely with people like Man Ray and other people in Europe, and his fame spread from Europe to America. He spent some time in America, really through inventing a completely new technique of filmmaking. And that's, I think, even for animators today, still very influential.
Eve, how did you decide what aspects of Len's life lent themselves to opera?
This wasn't so much my decision as Roger Horrocks, who wrote the libretto. He knew the whole trajectory of Len's life from his early days at Cape Campbell, which is a lighthouse in the South Island, his days at art school, his voyaging to London in the 20s and then going to New York in the 40s before returning to New Zealand at the end of his life. So he was perfectly placed to map this trajectory, if you like, which also maps quite a lot of the cultural history of the 20th century. And, of course, Len is the perfect protagonist for a thing like this. He's dynamic in himself. He was a charismatic guy. He looked hip. The way he moved, people used to comment on. He was a snappy dresser. He was way ahead of his time, you know, creatively, visually, in his attitudes, in his sexual mores. So if you want an opera subject for a contemporary opera, he's pretty hard to beat.
Tell us about the sexual mores. Everyone will be wondering about that now.
That's right. He wanted open relationships. He ran into trouble with his two wives, whom he loved very much. Jane Lai, who was the dancing instructor he met in London in the 1920s, found this particularly difficult because Len loved her, but he loved women. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted girlfriends, he wanted an open relationship. Eventually they came to grief. She couldn't take it anymore. However, when he met Anne a bit later on, Anne was Californian, a bit more relaxed in her own attitudes, and they formed a bond where they loved each other so much that there was trust, even though Len famously was having other relationships, and actually so did Anne. And, you know, they had a long and happy relationship for 30 years, not to say that they didn't have their ups and downs like any decent couple.
And these are chapters that find their way into the opera as well, right?
Yes, his creative life and his personal life run parallel in the opera. So you get a taste of what he's doing artistically all the way through, as well as who he's with.
Eve, what was your approach to the music in the opera?
I took my lead from Roger's libretto very much. As I read through each scene, and there are 29 scenes within the five acts, I took my lead from what was happening geographically, where were we, what was the mood, who was there, what was being said, what was being expressed. And I just went with the flow, so that when we get to London in the 20s, the music had to sound like Charleston, the rumba, the black bottom, so it's quite jazzy. Likewise, when he hits New York in the 40s, the music changes a bit and gets a bit more beboppy. And Len Lai's personal love of jazz, he wasn't a great classical guy.
Mm.
I've written quite a jazz-infused score.
And you've cast the baritone James Harrison as Len Lai himself, and I wonder what your Len is like.
He's pretty good. He's a lookalike, which sounds shallow, but it was very important that we, if we're putting on an opera about Len Lai, we had to have a guy that looked like him.
Because he's tall, most people, and doesn't have too much hair.
That's the one. And an imposing, charismatic physique with a sort of sexy feel about him and a sense of high-spiritedness. And he's got all those things. He's a New Zealand, young New Zealand singer who's doing well in London. So we've brought him over specially for this production.
And how have you integrated Len's works as films, his sound sculptures, his poetry? How have you integrated all of that into the opera?
Well, Shirley Horrocks, who is a filmmaker in her own right, who's also produced films about his work, has shot images to be projected on the set more or less throughout the opera. And some of these include footage at Cape Campbell, where Len Lai grew up, and some of these incorporate his own scratch films. And we do at one stage in the opera bring, let's say, a sculpture to life in the auditorium. And for this sculptural coup de théâtre, our trusty designer John Verwright has come up with a wind wand, which Len Lai will carry into the auditorium, shuffle past, you know, row C or whatever it is, and put it in the hole that it's supposed to plug into, and it'll light up. Cross your fingers, Matthew.
I hope it works.
Same. But we have to have something risky. An opera about Len Lai can't be free of risks.
Well, Chris, with the premiere of Len Lai the Opera and with Len Lai exhibitions mounted in New Zealand, Australia and beyond, how do you imagine Len's reputation developing over the coming years?
I think Len Lai's reputation will continue to grow, really, his influence on filmmakers and sculptors now. There's a lot of sculptors in Melbourne, particularly working in the kinetic field. He's been collected widely all over the world, and I think people are starting to realise that. We uncovered works, you know, in the Museum of Modern Art in New York that we didn't know were in their collection. His reputation will continue, and I think the Govert Brewster in New Zealand are doing a fantastic job of keeping that alive and putting him on the map.
Yes, with any luck, my opera will help to cement his reputation, at least in New Zealand for the meantime. In this country, we're very excited because there has been given the go-ahead for a Len Lai Centre in New Plymouth to be built next year, and that'll really set his reputation here, I think, for many years to come. But I think internationally, he lived in London, he lived in New York, and I think he will gradually get the recognition that he deserves as a unique 20th century artist of very high calibre.
Matthew Crawford speaking with Eve DeCastro-Robinson, the composer of Len Lai the Opera, which is showing in Auckland. And you also heard from Chris Harris from the Australian Centre for the Moving Image in Melbourne.